Seeing TAC members come up. July 30th meeting of the TAC committee. I'll start with a roll call. Rob Miller.
Present.
John Brady.
Here.
John Fouché.
Here.
Bob Simonson.
Here.
Russell Westerman.
Here.
Daniel Berman. I know he's here. He just went to pick up something. Marie Kelly.
Here.
Marshall Hilsky.
Present.
George Call.
Here.
James Furman.
Present.
Rob Scheib.
Here.
Karen Venditti.
Here.
Okay, we have everyone here tonight. Very good. This being the TAC's second meeting of the day, we're ready to go at it. The focus of tonight's meeting was to have been for the TAC to finalize a unified summary of pros and cons based on what we have been developed over the course of our deliberations on individual components of a wastewater system for Los Osos. Although each of the committees have put in a major effort to get this task completed in time for this meeting, I don't think we're yet at a point that we can get that finished this evening. I would like to propose that we follow our agenda with each committee reporting on what they have accomplished to date, followed by a general discussion of those reports. To follow up on this meeting and to try to keep our schedule for submission of our report, I would like to ask for a volunteer from each of the committees to meet with me tomorrow and finalize the pro-con summary. What we arrive at will be incorporated into the executive summary of our report that Karen and I will complete. The completed report will then be sent out to the TAC in advance and discussed and hopefully approved at our next TAC meeting. Public comments and questions will be taken after the three committees have presented their reports and before the TAC begins its discussion. At that time, only comments and questions pertaining to the pro-con reports will be allowed. I will call for all slips to be submitted before we begin. Once public comment begins, in order to keep our meeting on schedule, we will stop accepting new slips for that period. So please get your slip in if you wish to speak. If you have any other comments or questions relating to the TAC and its role, there will be a second public input at www.slocounty.california.gov/pw/LOWWP. Select the TAC page and then the link to the working draft pro-con analysis on project alternatives. This report has been updated to include any changes from the committees. We encourage your questions or comments on this report. Our email is lowwp@co.slo.ca.us. So what we're going to do then is go through the what the committees have at this point. We will then take that information. It will be combined into a summary report with the full pro-con analysis that we have to date, which is, I believe, up to 24 pages, and all combined. And this will be the basis of our report to the Board of Supervisors, which we hope to finalize by next week. What we have will be up on the screen. What we have will be on the screen. Okay, then. So with that, we'll start our meeting with the report from the committees. And we'll start once again with the engineering committee. Who's going to make that report?
Yeah, I'll be making that report today.
Okay.
The engineering committee met, again, and looked at, took another look at our pro-con statements, and we developed a kind of like a introductory section to this summary, which outlined our procedures that we took. We looked at the bylaws and found that the purpose of this tech committee consisted of three main reasons. We discussed how in this introductory verbiage here, how we achieved the purpose of this TAC through the series of public meetings, the development of criteria, and essentially the protocol for developing the pro-con analysis, and how we solicited public input as more valuable spent in looking at the pro-cons as a group, because one of the things that proceedings occurred, we found ourselves spending a great deal of time looking at the engineering of water, the water resources aspects to prepare for our meetings and presentations, and really didn't have a lot of time to really look at in detail the other subcommittees' pro-cons. And we suspect the same is probably true for the other subcommittees. They probably spent a lot of time on their particular presentations and really didn't have a lot of time to really analyze our particular pro-cons. And so one of the things that we're hoping to do is to say perhaps focusing in on the format is we look at the actual messages that we have here to see if there's a cross-check in reality. You know, we've learned as we went through this process, perhaps we can go back, and there's 25 pages here, and we have two meetings. I think we, as a group, may want to go revisit each one of these pages, and that way the public also has an additional input, opportunity for input for what these pro-con statements are. So that's basically what we've done, is we've done an introductory treatment on what we've done, and we're recommending that we stick with this particular format, and suggest that we focus our time on the content as opposed to the format.
Did your committee put together any written information from your meeting, or?
Yes, we
have. Okay. Well, if we can get that circulated to the TAC, that would be helpful then. So
that is our okay.
I notice that I did go out of order, and I didn't do the approval of the minutes of the meeting. So perhaps if we have no objection from anyone else on the TAC, I'll just insert that at this point here, and we'll do the approval of the minutes of our last meeting. Do we have any comments or corrections on the minutes from last week's meeting? Do we have any comments? John?
Still afternoon meeting, like
it
states.
It is not. It's from last week's meeting.
Are you going to have those minutes, or did somebody take minutes for that?
Those minutes will show up, but we don't have them today.
Okay,
that was only a few hours ago. This is just for last week's. We didn't have a special meeting last week before.
You've had two afternoon meetings.
Right. The week before we had an afternoon meeting, and we approved those minutes in our meeting.
Oh, I must have missed that. I might have came late. Sorry.
Remember, we're just looking for corrections to our minutes of our meeting. Did you have a correction, Alan?
Well, it is dependent on, you have a new member selected for the Environmental Committee.
No, we're looking for corrections.
Yes.
On
my comments during that meeting were not just simply about Tri-W. I think my comments were entirely lost in translation, so I'd rather have them stricken than be meaningless, unless you can confirm to me that the new member to the Environmental Committee is going to be watching all verbal transcripts of this.
I can confirm nothing to you except what's in the minutes of the meeting. And on individual inputs, we do not record the entire conversation in writing. We put the highlights. There is a record of all the meetings on tape right now, video. So we have our.
In that case, I wish my comments Alan, regarding Tri-W.
We can't pull
Thank
anything
you.
From the minutes. Okay. Any other comments on the minutes? Do I have a motion to accept the minutes? Do I have a second? And a second. All those in favor? Oh, I'm sorry, Marshall.
I don't have a problem. I have no problem with approving the minutes, but it says that the working group reports are attached and they're not. Okay. So.
What that was in the packet that you received on email, there were four. There were four PDF documents, and one of them was, I believe, all of the attachments. They're just not in this packet here in front of you.
Well, I'm just trying to clarify this, that the working group reports.
We accept the minutes from the last meeting. I'm sorry for taking. One abstention. So we have one abstention. Okay. And I'm sorry that's out of order. With that, I'd like to get back to the item two, agenda item, and we'll hear. Yes, we can. I know Dan Berman wanted to get some information. So let's move on to the Financial Committee's report, which is attached in your packet.
Thank you, Bill. We met on Friday afternoon, and we're trying to put things together over the weekend. So what you have in front of you is not our final draft, but it does sort of hit on our wish list of what we hope will be included, either because of our input as well as the input from engineering and environmental groups. So this is much broader than our past input, which has been more focused purely on financial things. Given that introduction, I'm just going to go through it briefly. Beginning with collection, you can see we've started with gravity. There are three pros that we have heard with gravity, including lower annual O&M costs, lower on-lot costs that are in the project itself, and there's no access required on private property. There might be another bullet added there. There's a space down there at the bottom. We also have concerns regarding the nuisance to the individual homeowners, the ongoing nuisance perhaps of pumping and repairs, et cetera. On the con side of gravity, it is a higher capital cost and it takes longer to construct. And Rob, we were going to check with you on the time to construct. I was going by memory there. Is 2 years correct? Yeah, okay. Impact on treatment costs. You can see that's the cost to treat this sewage, as well as both the capital cost of treatment and the O&M cost of treatment. It also has an impact on solids, both the treatment and the disposal, as well as that capital costs and O&M, both. We believe that there may be a higher risk of raw sewage spilling into the bay in the event of a system failure. Actually, this shows up in the EIR previously. Higher risk of impacting on archaeological resources. That in turn may result in delays, which has impact on costs. Another facet of the gravity collection system is the fact that we will need lift stations or pump stations to deal with our topography. The county has indicated what those will look like, how much energy they will take, et cetera. And there's quite a few of them, to be honest with you. When I looked through the EIR, it recognized 11 lift stations, whereas the current plan is looking at 20. So we're looking at a different design, evidently, in some respects. The last con, or excuse me, two more cons. Another con may be the costs that the homeowner incurs with on-lot work. The cost is shifted from the project to the homeowner. So that's a pro-con, depends on which way you're looking at it. And finally, we also noticed in the EIR that there is a higher energy usage with low pressure. or maybe that came from the NWRI. In comparison with STEPSTAY, you can see its pros include lower capital costs and a shorter time to construct, which will reduce inflation. Provides primary treatment in the septic tank, thereby reducing the downline costs for the treatment system and for the solids treatment and disposal. We believe that it reduces the risk of raw sewage spilling into the bay in the event of a system failure. Relating to the drilling or trenching, it's a smaller pipeline, so it requires a shallow trench or horizontal drilling, either way resulting in less road impacts and traffic nuisance, less risk to archaeological resources, and less risk of associated delays and the costs that we would incur with that. STEP requires no lift stations and manholes, and that reduces our footprint requirements. When we get to siting, you'll notice we do talk about the primary sites for the treatment facility. However, if we have a gravity system, there will be additional small sites required around the community to accommodate lift stations. There is minimal risk of INI. That was with gravity, excuse me. With STEP, there is a minimal risk of INI, that results in a lower impact, a lower load on the treatment facility. And it also has lower costs paid by the homeowner for the on-lot work. And again, STEP loan becomes our means of funding. They may require separate electrical connection. That's a high-cost premium. We've been assured by the county that they're going to fight that to the bone. And finally, the cons would be a loss of land on the individual property. And with this, we want people to be able to visualize what that looks like. In both situations of collection, obviously, the old tank will be demolished, and the homeowner is responsible for that and responsible for laying in a lateral from the house to the new tank. And that may include a grinder pump in order to pump uphill a little bit. That's a lot of work just to get that done, as well as to re-landscape. After that's all done, the new tank will most likely go in the front, fairly near the street we expect. And it will be buried, but there will be a 2-foot diameter hatch that is visible. And I'm not certain how much landscaping or hardscape will be able to go over that. Probably not hardscape, but landscape. That takes care of collection. Next page goes over the 4 primary treatment plans, and I won't go through each of these in so much detail because you can see them clearly, the pros and the cons for each. This is a little less detailed, but each one should be addressing relatively the footprint, the capital costs, the annual O&M, and any impact and other components within the system. Those are the main things. We've also included risk of odors. We want to be good neighbors. And let's see. Energy usage was another piece of that pie, too. We want to be looking at those factors, and I'm sure environmental and engineering will bring other factors that need to be looked at. But those are the things we're comparing. As you look at the pros and cons, PONS comes out with the lowest capital costs, lowest annual O&M, lowest energy usage, and it eliminates the cost of solids treatment. It also reduces the cost and nuisance of sludge hauling. That only happens once every 20 years or so. However, on the con side, it does require a larger footprint. It may require additional nitrification treatment and its costs, and it has a higher risk of odors. So those are the things that we are very aware of with PONS. And with MBR, which is the Tri-W technology, we recognize it has a smaller and noted that that was expected to increase with time. And the MBR has a higher annual O&M. The next component is biosolids. Bill, we kind of shifted things around a little bit. We decided to eliminate heat-dried Class B, which is usually used to create Class A solids. And because of the expense, we just took that off the plate. But we did look at digested in addition to subclass B and composted A. Subclass B, of course, is the lowest capital cost. lowest annual O&M, and it is flexible. It can be upgraded down the road. However, on the cons, it does produce the greatest volume of sludge, and the numbers are there for gravity and step. Very different numbers, if you'll notice. It is the most restrictive disposal option. It doesn't give you a whole lot of choices unless you do treat it additionally. The highest hauling costs and traffic nuisance, we should take out that line in the center of town. I think that was falling under Tri-W. Produces the lowest quality of sludge, which may require additional treatment in the future. In other words, there may be some landfills or sludge receiving centers who won't take subclass B in the future. There's also a risk of substantial increase in hauling costs over time, and the fact that the regulations may become more stringent as well. Digested class B, on the other hand, it gives us a little lower volume, and that lowers the hauling costs, traffic nuisance, and it's more flexible for more disposal options. On the con, it does cost more, both capital costs and O&M. Composted A produces a lower volume yet, and the highest quality of biosolids with the greatest range of disposal options. It even has a potential to generate revenue, and there's some discussion about how that might happen. On the con side, it does cost more. Both capital costs and annual O&M is higher. And there are questions about the user demand. We would probably have to contract some folks to handle the marketing and distribution and that stuff. The last solids disposal note here is facultative ponds. And they do not require ongoing sludge disposal. Again, they would be dredged approximately every 20 years. On to sites. The cemetery is too small by itself. However, because it's adjacent to Jacamatsi to visitors as well as funeral events, we wonder whether or not the cemetery folks would really be willing to sell. Jacamatsi does have sufficient acreage, which gives it flexibility for alternative energy, future expansion and upgrades, and it's screened from the road. It has a low population density and currently has a willing seller. There's a note here about community acceptance of out-of-town site. I should clarify, that's the community that feels accepting of that is the in-town community. The community that lives out there may not be so accepting, so that's kind of both a pro and a con. But it is closer to agricultural reuse potential and spray fields if that's needed. The downside for Jacamatsi is its distance from the potential Brodersen leach field. Brannan is also relatively small in terms of usable acreage, but because it's adjacent to Jacamatsi, it also has a potential for alternative energy, future expansion, and upgrades. But it also has another kind of bright spot, and that is the potential for wetland storage. We know that any disposal option will require winter storage, so we can picture a nice little wetland out in Brannan. On Tri-W, we recognize it's already owned by the CSD, and the site has already been mitigated, and therefore that might shorten construction time. The central location should reduce the cost of the collection system, and the proximity to Brodersen should reduce the cost of piping to a leach field. However, on the con side, we see that Tri-W actually has a very high land value and carried a very stiff mitigation requirements. The small acreage in the downtown location requires the most expensive treatment facility and higher costs overall. It lacks flexibility for future expansion, upgrades, and alternative energy. It has a high risk associated with system failure due to its proximity to the bay. It obviously has lacked community acceptance due to many things, including its proximity to a church, library, community center, and the traffic impacts that would incur. It's the greatest distance to agricultural reuse and also to spray fields if we have to go that route. And there's a note here that the NWRI, it was their unanimous opinion that an out-of-town site is better due to the problematic issues with the downtown site. Greatest capacity, and they have lower, the effluent would not have to be treated to such a high level. tertiary and denitrification would probably not be required. But on the con side for spray fields, it does not help with our seawater intrusion at all. There is no mitigation. Matter of fact, it actually has a negative impact on our groundwater balance. Everything that we dispose of on the spray fields is lost to the groundwater basin. It requires the biggest footprint, and it has a high, you know, therefore the highest land costs associated with buying it. There are also the highest capital costs for piping to the fields and the high risks of trenching that go along with that piping. I'm going to come back to the asterisk in a moment. On to the cemetery. The cemetery, again, needs the water, and it's close to Jacamatsi, so that means that if we do provide effluent, treated effluent to the cemetery for its water so that it stops pumping, that will reduce, you know, the cost of piping that will be very small. However, it has a very limited capacity. It only uses 50 acre feet, and it doesn't get us very much mitigation because it's so far out to the east. We only get 5 acre feet of mitigation out of that. It's a relatively small cost, so it's on the left-hand side there, you'll see cost per acre foot mitigated, and for lack of better information, we've put negligible. Agricultural reuse is a real pro in the sense it potentially reduces pumping large volumes from the aquifer. Now, given it's at the east end of the aquifer, so we're not getting much bang for our buck, but because of the volume, there's real potential there. It's also fairly close to Jacamatsi, so there's not a whole lot of piping cost for that. And there's hopefully the flexibility to upgrade from agricultural in lieu, which means the farmers stop pumping and using the treated wastewater instead, to agricultural exchange, where we actually get that well water piped back into town to substitute or replace pumping from the west end of the aquifer. The cons for agricultural reuse is, again, the low mitigation factor and the time that it may take to work up the credibility in the contracts with the farmers. Brodersen has a moderate capacity, and we're showing 448 acre feet without the harvest wells. It has a moderate mitigation factor value, even though we already own it. There is a high risk of more stringent DHS regulations in the future, and the NWRI said that if Brodersen is used, it is important to evaluate compliance with the new DHS groundwater recharge reuse criteria. The EIR commented that Brodersen is subject to landsliding once it is disturbed due to the sandy soils and a 10% slope. The EIR also indicated that leach field trenches pose significant risk of liquefaction. I think it was Dr. Sheik or Mr. Sheik of the Ripley Group questioned the efficacy of the leach fields at Brodersen. He said that the ability to mitigate seawater intrusion is not tested, modeled, or calculated. Moreover, that the clay lenses will tend to move the water horizontally, not vertically. At Brodersen, another con is that the higher capacity, if we put more than 448 acre feet there, requires harvest wells, which have additional capital costs, O&M, and requires purveyor participation. Another thing about Brodersen is it does require complete reconstruction every 10 years. So that completes our verbal pros and cons. And I would just add that we previously submitted, I think last week, submitted the tables, a very brief set of tables. I have these here, a copy for myself. I'm sorry, I didn't make copies because I think you all had these before, but I'll take them over to Diane and she'll put them up there. Essentially, it just, in a nutshell, thank you. Why don't you go ahead and do that? That's great. In a nutshell, it highlights the capital costs and O&M for each component, for each alternative of each component, I should say. The tables are quite brief, just a page and a half, so it's our hope that whatever verbiage is included in the executive summary, pros and cons, the tables might be part of that, as opposed to being an appendix. And I think that'll do it for the moment. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you, George. I mentioned I'd come back to that asterisk. The finance group unanimously believes, again, we've stated this, that seawater intrusion is mitigation is of utmost importance. Also, we recognize that level 1A and level 2A are just about the same capital cost. We recognize that level 2A is a higher O&M cost. So we've redone everything to jive with level 2A on our report from reuse and disposal.
Thank you very much, Karen. That was a well thought out report. I'd like to move on then to the environmental group. After 30 seconds of conference. I'll note while they're conferring there that the financial group, the way they formulated their information for this meeting is really the closest to what I had in mind. And so when we're done, and after public comment, we may want to use, without throwing any barbs or anything, but we may want to use that as a talking document for our discussion. Okay. And now we have the environmental group.
We apologize, but
it happens.
There was a mix-up in getting the report.
It happens.
So we have a, well, first, let's, you have a copy of this, Diana?
I didn't get anything.
But I just handed you a hard copy when I walked in. Okay. But I'm not sure how useful it's going to be to throw it up on the screen there. I was running these off of my printer at home and ran out of ink, so we have some shared copies for folks. Let's pass those three over that away for people. We'll distribute this to everyone. I think what we've done is gone through and made a round of revisions on our pro-cons by chapter. But rather than go through every bullet point of every section, what I'd like to do is we've tried to create a very brief narrative summary and comments by chapter. And so I think what's going to be most productive here is if we read through those narrative and summary comments by chapter here. And then, you know, once we get into our discussion, we'd like to get comments back from everyone. And discuss all the details and all the bullets, but I don't think it's going to be a system. The individual components can be chosen from across these alternatives. We feel that the leach fields or possibly percolation ponds at Broderson seem like a critical part of the wastewater project in order to assure recharge of the upper and lower aquifer. And then some of our comments we had are that, I'm on page two here, is that creek discharge and the use of injection wells, we think are two things that were screened out of this fine screening report, but we think that they should be considered and may deserve some additional analysis, probably at the kind of CEQA NEPA environmental review level, and that, again, the responsibility of achieving balance in our water basin cannot and should not be the sole responsibility of the wastewater project, but needs to be shared among all the water users and purveyors within the basin. For the collection system, we never really did a pro-con. We sort of just talked about step stag and gravity, and our executive summary really came down to step collection. The greatest concerns are with the short and long-term on-lot impacts, including effects on people's landscaping, potential loss of community trees. As advantage of step collection is really the street impacts are much less. You have smaller pipe and shallower trenching, maybe less dewatering as a consequence, and less cost, with at least on the in the street section. With gravity collection, you get away from as much impact on people's lots, but you have greater concerns with the impacts of the construction in terms of dewatering and the depth of pipe placement. That's really what we felt like that boiled down to. With the treatment technology, our summary, we had a couple things here. Let's see. One thing we wanted to clarify, because we felt like there's been some confusion on this in our group and in the community, is that we shouldn't confuse a PON system when we talk about a facultative PON system, that's not the same as a community amenity in terms of recreation or a park-like setting. Facultative PONs are, you know, a part of the treatment process, but they're not something that would be pleasant to stroll around hand in hand. So that together at the level of an entire project, we're hopeful that's something that the CEQA-NEPA process is going to, I understand it now, has to do as part of CEQA-NEPA under new state law. We'll see if we can get farther on that. Certainly the treatment technology is a big component of that. We also wanted to emphasize that we want the project team, we talked about this at our last meeting, that the project team, we should really look at the Tri-W site and the MBR treatment technology, not necessarily as an entirely fixed, immutable system, but that are there other ways that we can combine either the site or the treatment technology with some of the other options that have been laid out here. And we wanted to emphasize as well that because MBR technology produces really the highest quality effluent of any of the technologies we're looking at, when we look at the energy consumption of that and the cost of that, we should consider it in terms of not just the other treatment technologies, but the other treatment technology and the additional polishing steps that would be necessary. If we want that quality of effluent, the MBR technology gets you this. It costs more and it has a higher energy consumption, but it spits out cleaner effluent at the end. And so if we want to go with a lower level, if we want to go with a technology that produces a lower level, we should compare it in terms of apples and apples, if that's the effluent we need, and basically add that polishing step on in terms of cost and energy consumption. With the biosolids, I think this is pretty straightforward. We've made it pretty clear, I think, from the environmental group's perspective that composted Class A biosolids is really the preferred solution in terms of an environmental perspective. Facultative ponds are sort of the next best option because they just lead to a much lower production of biosolids, and then STEP has an advantage here too because it also leads to a lower production of biosolids, whichever technology you combine it with. We understand at this point the fine-screening report is not pointed in this direction. It's looking at a much, much lower level of solids treatment. We're hopeful that at the least we don't get ourselves in this. We come up with an option where we still have the ability to add on biosolids handling locally and get to this Class A. So we don't want to get in other community events that are there, Memorial Day. And then in the opposite direction, you know, you get closer to Warden Lake, which is a sensitive wetland area. As you go, Brandon's the closest, and then Jacamazzi. But in general, the advantages at all three sites are the low population density in the area, construction's happening out of town, the site areas are generally large enough to provide, flexibility in terms of treatment and to provide some potential for alternative energy production out there. The land use, compatible in terms of land use plans, although we are losing ag land, at least with two of those three sites. The Tri-W site, we've sort of with the other groups here, it has some advantages in terms of work that's already been done. It's in our ownership. It's also technically compatible with land use plans, although it's inconsistent with the Los Osos vision, LOCAC's vision statement. The big downside is the high population density and the, you know, community opposition we're all familiar with that's a result of that. It's also on much more sensitive habitat, although that habitat has been pretty destroyed. There's some regrowth happening out there now. It is still Esha. is by definition those sands, I mean, the underlying soils there are still environmentally sensitive habitat. They could be restored. The other point wanted to make on treatment plant sites is that, you know, at least the way we're looking at this, the fine screening report has basically taken us to two treatment plant options, the cemetery area and Tri-W. We understand why it's the arguments that's been made to do that, but we're a little concerned about really just looking at two options for siting. And so we're hopeful that, again, sort of in an environmental analysis, that some of the other sites that were identified in the rough screening will be looked at with a little more detail than we've seen so far. I mean, and I guess one way to think about it, that is just, you know, if we run into some unexpected problem out at these cemetery sites, maybe it turns out there's a giant Chumash village underneath them. I don't know. It's possible. Then we're back. We only have one other option, you know. And so having some other options that we've looked at in more detail seems like it'd be beneficial. So that's
narrative form, so we have some things to talk about. With that, I'd like to take it from the TAC to community input. Once again, I'd like to remind you, if you wish to speak, please get your slips in now. Once we start the community input, we're not going to accept any more slips, so we can gauge the timing. So I'll wait a moment, see if any more slips come in.
Bill, if I could, I know for our group, I think it would be really helpful to hear from folks that are here tonight what kind of format would be most helpful to you guys for our final report. Do you want narrative? Do you want tables? I mean, we're going to have, I guess to some extent, we're going to have all of the above, but we're all struggling with how to come up with the most useful, concise report of all this technical, complicated, you know, costs and engineering and options. So if people have any comments tonight for us about what kind of format would be most easily understood and most useful for you and your neighbors in the community, I think that'll be really appreciated.
To the community?
Just a quick qualification on that, if I may. I believe it was our understanding that we're probably going to be having two different documents or cover documents, like summary documents, one for the Board of Supervisors and one for the public. So I'm assuming, Dan, that your question is regarding the one that is geared for the public.
Well,
okay, I'm not sure we're going to have two documents on this though, Karen. We're going to have two documents, but one is on components, which is to the Board of Supervisors, which is from our bylaws, and the second will be on projects to the project team. I don't know of a third report we'll have. But let's hear from the community, and then we'll discuss our... Okay, with that... Diana, do you have the slips? Okay, great. Okay. We'll start off. It's three minutes. It's going to be
perspective. Many of the issues, including things that I thought should have been in the environmental side, I haven't heard from the engineering side their report. But you really did cover some of the things and really dig deep, and I really appreciate that. On the other hand, I don't know if maybe we just need to spend some time reading the executive summary there, but I was very disappointed in the fact that in the document for the environmental, there isn't a matrix with some sort of reference to what you're looking at on an environmental from an environmental perspective. In other words, where are the rules and the policies and things that you're supposed to be following? Instead, we hear about ponds, whether we want to stroll hand in hand around them or not. Maybe they stink. Certainly, a pond that does not produce sludge is really an important pond for an environmental perspective. What you're going to do with sludge in the future is going to be huge. What is in that sludge and what you're going to do with it? There are all kinds of rules and regulations and policies and kind of environmental doctrine that you should be looking at as the core. Certainly MBR and coming back to Tri-W is foolish. Your environmental demands that you look at your carbon footprint. In energy, where's your energy? It's real easy to put a kilowatt hour per million gallon cost. It's real easy. You stick it up there, we can look at it, we can compare it, we can say that's really environmentally foolish. Understanding many of the things that I think Steve Page has brought forward is vital. We need to have more, and I don't want to be picking on you. I know you're short one person, and I would hope that you would have put somebody on there that really had those, maybe even Steve, I don't know. Does that signal me off, or I have a minute?
That's 1 minute.
Okay. I really do like the format that that we saw on the environmental side. It was very easy to follow, and I thought you did an outstanding job. That's the financial side. The cost of time to develop a project, the longest lead time and the timeline and the overlap is the collection system. So really how long it takes to put a treatment plan in is irrelevant. It truly is irrelevant. So if you look at your timelines, lay them out, it's collection that is the driver. And I really do appreciate the detail that you went into, and I would hope that they would share some of that thought on the benefits of the STEP collection system or a collection system that is more environmentally favorable. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your comments. Bo Cooper, followed by
Solutions. You only have a very narrow range of options that you looked at. There are other things that Pavo says, oh, later on we'll look at regional solutions. Later on we'll talk to Renko. You guys have been used to legitimize what Carollo and I think the county and Pavo want to have happen. So I think you need to be aware that you've been duped in that kind of way and haven't had a full range of things to present. You need to reframe your task, I think. The Financial Committee especially needs to talk about affordability. I've mentioned that before. The affordability is, I'm not just talking. I'm talking about not losing my house. I'm talking about 5,000 people not losing their houses. I think affordability to a particular people is important. The honorable thing in terms of the pro-con analysis, two things. What I would do, two things. One is to refuse to turn in the pro-con analysis, saying we didn't have all the choices that we need to present for the community. We've been narrowed prematurely, and we refuse to turn in any pro-con analysis. Allowing that might not happen. A second position would be for some of you who have the most integrity to say, I submit a protest to the process. I accept this is what I had to do. This was the task I was tasked with, but it's unacceptably narrow, and I wanted to protest the narrowness of my choices. So I offer you that as a legitimate, fair, honorable option for you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Lacey Cooper, followed by Al Barrow.
Okay. It's Lacey Cooper, and I have some questions. Is the replacement of roads included in the gravity system estimates? And how do replacement of roads, how does STEP impact the replacement of roads? Let's see. I had a question about the higher O&M for STEP, and I'm assuming that came out of the, I guess this is for financial, I'm assuming that came out of the Carollo report, and I was wondering what the O&M comparisons were in the Ripley report, and maybe possibly looking at something like a Renko. I know there's been controversy over, you know, STEP versus gravity numbers, so... let's see. Also, I believe that might be challenged that you have to destroy all the septic tanks, and I'm not sure what kind of ponding that is. I thought it was a facultative pond, but I asked him about odors, and he said that, well, every, you know, all plants have odors, but he didn't specifically seem to think that they were higher than other plants. So I think there is actually ways that things are measured, and so that would be worth looking into. And it's a question, I suppose, for Rob or someone tonight to just briefly explain the difference between the ponds. That would be good. And the other question is, I'd like for us people who don't know a lot about what is dewatering, because that was brought up as a con. And then talk a little bit about wetlands, what they are and what their uses are. And also, is it really true that the MBR makes a cleaner effluent? I mean, if you have... I'm assuming that's the gravity system where you're doing raw sewage, but if you had a step system, do you need an MBR? You know, I'm trying to figure out if that, you know, if those things go together, if you have a step to an MBR, do you need that? Is there something that makes it just as clean that uses a lot less energy? Because, and that's, I don't know if Gail brought it up, but one sentence is that energy use seems to be something that's a little bit more complicated than, as she said, kilowatt hours.
Thank you very much. Al Barrow, followed by David Duggan.
Thank you. I'm going to just run through these very quickly and then make some comments. I did think there was some bias showing here. Wetlands options, wetlands, can they be enhanced? Can they be improved? Can wetlands be expanded upon and be used for partial treatment or polishing the existing wetlands? You knew about subsurface wetlands. There are also a possibility of polishing and final treatment. Solar energy, Palm Springs was on the web today for making about $100,000 a year off of their solar panel energy sales while they were operating their utilities. So I thought that's a good example if you want to go to Cal Water, and you can see that. Cost for biosolids, regional plant, limited to the coastal areas for collection. Have you investigated that possibility? Then you would get some tipping fees and a reduction of costs. See that if that, the greater the risk for people to be unable to handle the risks. I think that's something. And you know, I realize that NEPA CEQA may have some of that later on, but when you're getting into something, you should know that. So that's the affordability. And the cost values and assumptions that were in the fine screening tables seem to have dissolved a little bit or eroded or changed. Could you explain how you lowered those costs somewhat, if that is correct? Septic replacements, there wasn't any done in Charlotte County with their 5,000. They're going to do 40,000 in their county. So that was an interesting fact that they did not replace anything. And I think you can make an ordinance that on sale of a home, if the system is inspected, needs to be replaced, it should be replaced then. But all that capital cost up front. And you can reduce the collection system costs by step steg, adding the steg like we had originally, which is the gravity, because there's a lot of opportunities for gravity flow out of these septic tanks. If you take advantage of those, then you don't have that on-lot cost that's so high, and you don't have the impact from an environmental standpoint if you don't have to replace so many septic tanks. That's important. And the pond smell, our CSD, when it was formed, I'm finishing up, they went up to visit a pond system, and they had wine and cocktails, and they were enamored with it. There wasn't an odor, so thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Al. Dave Duggan, followed by Frank Asilio.
Dave Duggan, Los Osos. I saw something in there about MBR being considered on other sites other than Tri-W. And I clearly heard the county said that MBR would not be considered. And so I think you may have wasted some time there in that sense. As well as the decommissioning of septic tanks in the Coastal Commission's application, there is a section in there on using septic tanks for rainwater collection. It's part of the conditions of the Coastal permit. You guys haven't read that yet, have you? Shame on you. you need to look at that and see what all the conditions are. And do you really know your environmental code, your environmental requirements? That question was brought up earlier. I suppose maybe around a pond that's being used for the system. I'm sorry, every time you guys say that, you're insulting the intelligence of the people that are here and in the community, because they know the difference between ponds and wetlands. And that's an insult. I know the difference between a wetlands and a pond that's being used as part of the system. Don't keep repeating that. Stop insulting the community. Yeah, I'm looking right at you. So, and I can't, are you guys in touch with what's going on with our water resource capacity studies and what's been going on with the rest of the county on that? Because it seems like you're not taking those considerations in with what the county is now going to be recommending for conservation and how to balance the basin. Seems like you're just thinking, well, this, it doesn't seem like you're putting two and two together. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. And they're going to recover a lot of through conservation. So how much are we looking at through bringing water back to the community? And I also want to repeat, a third of Tri-W can be used as a wetlands. And the rest, because those can be what it was meant to be.
Can you wrap it up, please?
Yes. Office and retail. Thank you.
Thank you. Frank Acilio, followed by Bruce Payne.
Frank Acilio. I'm going to bring up the... first of all, I'd like to thank everybody for the continuing education I'm getting here to be able to ask the questions. And I'd like to apologize if I mispronounced this name, but there's the, again, the Eto Farm. Now, when I'm bringing that up, of course, I've talked to some people about this, and it's on the west side of the creek. It's farmland, and it also has wetlands on that property, which would make it, to me, some kind of ideal for injection wells, possibly. Also, flexibility for any type of technology for treating wastewater. Since we do have, that's why I brought up injection wells, large capacity for storage. It was in one of the reports that somebody presented at one time. So I'm going to ask questions later about injection wells. Also, on that site, it has several production wells that are producing water at this time that can be used also for the particular water purveyors. Also, the possibility of not having to bring water back over to Broadison. With the ponds versus some other system and draining, I've talked to Rob about this, cleaning out the pond system every 15 to 20 years. That's a long time away. If we have a system built in 5 years, pond and system, and we have to clean it out in 15 years, the technology for dealing with that biosolid would be much different than it is today. If we can't truck it anywhere, they can probably come on site and probably deal with it on site with the technology that would be available in 20 years. I'm hoping that the engineers will come up with this type of technology to deal with other issues. Better than trying to figure out how to haul away some others off-site. Biosolids ponds. Also on the issue of presentation for the public, I'm looking at the, when I hear the spray fields, I kind of get a little alarmed about that, because that to me is just wasting water, just throwing water away. And I'd like to see those kind of things in red. Spray fields, red. Because to me, that's really not an option. It's not a pro, it's not a con, it's just not an option. So when we come across those type of items, instead of just having to report all in black, put those things in red. Personally, I like to strike them out altogether, say they're not viable, but in red would be good. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bruce Payne, followed by Keith Wimmer.
Good evening, I'm Bruce Payne, resident of Los Osos. I was interested in your discussion about the sludge and the cost of handling the sludge and et cetera, et cetera. I've asked Rob Miller several times to tell me what percentage of reduction the Montgomery Watson Harza plant had of solids. He told me there were all kinds of charts in the thing to look at. I didn't have a copy of any of that anyway. But I wonder if sometime you could give me an estimate of an approximate estimate of what the solids reduction is. One thing that I don't know if your committees have been informed is in the water code, it says any biosolids over 50% moisture require the same handling as hazardous waste. Actually, what it says, they require being held in a lined pond or tank to catch the leachate, which will be gravitated off or pumped off into another tank, tested and disposed. But it's given by the same water board that gave a permit to Casmalia dump site, so maybe that's going to be a big cleanup for somebody someday. The other thing about the sludge, I asked Mr. Watson, or Highland, his name was, Highland, who was the engineer on Montgomery Watson here for a while, I asked him what percent of solids reduction they had, and he said, well, it's cheaper to do it off-site. We were being called, that was being called unclassified sludge at that time. I think that was a lot more honest than putting a spin on it, calling it sub-B class. Why don't we just call everything that isn't A class, sub-A class? We can do away with B, C, and all of that stuff. Also, you mentioned purple pipe for running back into town as an expense. Did you do a cost estimate on purple pipe, what the installation costs, what the O&M costs for capital costs and upkeep and pumping? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Keith Weimer, followed by Richard Marketson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's the pronunciation of my name. Very good.
I'm learning.
Thanks. Just a couple of comments for the Finance Committee. And first, I wanted to thank you. I thought your presentation was very well organized. And I, in response to Don, I suggest that that's the format that you use. It's very clear. I think a chart type of situation is clear, possibly a summary too, but the summary being very brief and reflected directly by the chart. One comment, O&M. Costs are not for STEP are not supported even by the data that Corolla gives. They refer back to their rough screening, and if you look at that, one of the places, Charlotte, didn't even report on what the O&M costs were. They do conflict with Ripley's O&M costs for STEP, and I think that needs to be challenged. INI also is not a risk, it's a certainty, that's a given, that's a, you know, something that's been proven, so that should be reflected as not the risk of or the potential for, but simply, that it's a certainty. Also, I want to mention real quickly that are actually taken from earlier in the report rather than Chapter 7 will be numbers we'll continue to look at. Real quick on the environmental, again, INI should be acknowledged. The higher energy costs should be acknowledged instead of continually avoiding actually saying that MBR is a higher energy consumer. Brodersen is assumed to be necessary in your report, but it's not necessary. If you're going to ask for other investigations, why not ask for evaluation of a decentralized system, the purple pipe that goes along with that? Gray water use, Tonini exchange, and other things that would supplement Brodersen. To lump all the sites together as a cemetery, I think, in that one group oversimplifies. They are all very different. And the odor control, remember, in sites that are a long ways away from the community, are not as much a concern. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And our last speaker is Richard Marketson. Can you please, Al, could you please sit down?
Richard,
I'm sorry, let me restart you, Richard.
Okay. Richard Margetson. My first comment is about the comment in the STEPSTEG collection analysis that the PRO is shorter time to construct, 9 months. I believe it probably is shorter time period to construct, but think about it, folks, 9 months to do 4,800 connections. That averages out, if you're working a work week, 24 a day. That means everything on site plus the street. If you're working 7 days a week, if you can get a company to come in and do it 7 days, that's 18 a day for 270 days straight. I don't think that's possible. I kind of compare it to the water department right now is replacing service lines, and I think their highest month they've done maybe 50 in a month replacing the water service line. So I think that's something that needs to be reevaluated. There's a couple footnotes on page 5 dealing with the first one. The finance group recognized substantially 90% of this project when it all works out anyway. And just, you know, keep that set. Am I done?
No, you have a minute.
I'd like an explanation of the last footnote on that page. Maybe Rob can discuss the 230 gallons per day needing to be east of the fault line, because that works out to about 260 acre feet. And I just want an explanation of why that would do that. Maybe you know, or maybe you don't. And then I'll save my other comment for later. Thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, I'll bring it back to the TAC.
I did turn in to speak.
You turned in for a general comment.
Oh, I checked the wrong box.
You did. You want to change it? Okay. With that, we'll bring it back to the TAC. And first, we'll try to respond to some of the questions. And Rob, you always seem to have the best list.
I have a list. I didn't do too well last week. Okay. I think this is Lacey's question. Is the replacement of roads in the gravity system? And the answer is yes. In table 3.17, that cost is estimated at $5.2 million. And then how does that compare to STEP? STEP, they put a range on it, anywhere from a fourth of that gravity cost at 1.3 to half of the gravity cost at 2.6, and that's in table 3.18. There was a question as to how the O&M cost compared to Ripley and Orinco estimates. On the energy side, Ripley was somewhat lower on the energy estimate, perhaps $150,000 to $200,000 lower in terms of annual energy cost. The two main comments that Orinco had on the estimates were they're arguing for a longer pump-out interval in terms of the septic tanks and arguing for a longer replacement time between the times you have to replace their pumps. They'd argue for more than 10 years. As far as ponds and how this term facultative relates to Nelson ponds and other ponds, Nelson ponds are facultative ponds. They're just a certain style and technology used in those ponds, but those terms can be used interchangeably. What is dewatering? That's the so I was going to make. Yes, it's true. Cleaner in terms of certain constituents. None of these technologies remove things like dissolved solids, like salts and that sort of thing. What an MBR will do will be to produce an effluent that has less BOD, less suspended solids. You know, those are things that also get removed in the soil column, or if you're applying to land for agricultural reuse, would be removed in the root zone of the plants. But yes, in terms of what comes out of the plant, it is a cleaner effluent in terms of solids. I think there was a question as to what is STEG, that septic tank effluent gravity, would be without a pump in the high areas of the community, such as, you know, on Highland Drive and so forth. There was a question about the effectiveness of injection wells out west of the creek, but on the Eto site. I don't know if that's been reviewed in detail by Cleith. I think initial discussions with them have shown that west of town is where we really have the best bang for the buck in terms of injection. But that'd be interesting to talk to them about whether you could even pull off injection. Also, you are subject to many more stringent requirements if you inject the water as opposed to simply apply it to ag lands. Bruce Payne asked his question that he always asked me. I think I've got an answer here. I'm going to take a shot at this. And what percent solids is destroyed or reduced in an MBR plant? I think I finally clicked. The percent is actually 0%. The MBR technology doesn't destroy solids. It simply converts them from a dissolved portion to cell mass. And it's that cell mass that produces the biosolids. So you have a pound of solids coming in as, you know, organic material, which is food, and then a pound of solids goes out as cell mass. And most of the technologies like MBR and extended aeration simply have, you know, a 0% reduction in those solids, essentially. And that's borne out in the tables in the sludge section. As compared to plants that are used step effluent, which has more like a 75% reduction, which is included in all the analysis here. And then Richard was asking about the footnote on the bottom of the environmental and financial, excuse me. I believe, and I'm pretty sure on this, that when Cleith had done some of the initial statement hails back from before we had that updated information, but Spencer would need to answer that question.
Is there anyone else on the TAC who wishes to respond to our questions from the...
I'm sorry, the 9 months, I agree with that. I think that's 9 months for the installation of the street work, laterals and mains in the street. I think that would be, I would think 9 months to a year would be reasonable to get all the mains in the streets. As far as the on-lot work, even the gravity system at 2 years, it was never contemplated that you could have all the on-lot work done in that two-year frame. That work wasn't even to start until after that two-year period. So I don't know that a formal estimate has been assembled as far as the time from starting the project to where you've connected everybody for gravity and step to be compared in that vein. I've just heard comparisons of the street work, which is 1 year for step, 2 years for gravity. Although other people may have more information on that.
Thank you. Is there anyone else from the TAC who wishes to comment?
I'd like to comment, Mr. Chair. I guess first, I'd like to say it certainly wasn't my intention or our intention to insult Mr. Dugan's intelligence by talking about the pond systems. It was, I think, I'll just go with what we originally felt like, that there is a potential for confusion there. And I'd also like to be clear in response to a couple of people's comments that our comments about, in that regard, about ponds is not intended to be saying anything negative about a facultative pond treatment system. There's a lot of... there's a lot of pros, especially from an environmental perspective, to a pond system, and I think we've captured those here. I think I mentioned them. You produce much less sludge. It's one of the least energy-intensive systems, and I think it has a lot of pros from an environmental perspective. It just is not the kind of pond that we necessarily are going to have public access to. And ponds that we could have public access to in terms of kind of wetlands for polishing also have some environmental pluses if we can find a place with space to do them. And so I guess I think it seemed like that came across as though we were trying to say something negative about a ponding treatment system, and that wasn't our intention in the slightest. I guess the other comments, I agree with Mrs. McPherson. As I said, both that sludge production is a major environmental problem. I only was brief about it because it seemed very straightforward to us from an environmental perspective that it takes this much energy. I think we're going to push the county team to do the best job they can once we get, which we're going to be doing over the next couple weeks, getting to putting whole projects together. That's when it's going to make sense, I think, and I apologize we keep pushing it. We have looked at it at these component by component levels. I think it's going to make the most sense to take a whole project and say how many kilowatt hours is it going to take to push a million gallons or a gallon through this entire project from start to finish. The only other responses I had to comments, Lacey Cooper talked a little bit about gravity effluent versus step effluent, and that's something that's come up a number of times. Folks have talked about step effluent as being less of a risk if it spills. Our understanding, talking with the regional board, and maybe Rob can clarify this, is there are some differences in terms of the effluent in the streets with a gravity system versus a step system, but step, it is still hazardous, high nitrates, high fecal bacteria. It, you know, the solids are more dissolved, perhaps. I don't know if I've got the engineering jargon right here, but I think we shouldn't mistake the effluent in a step system as somehow being something that we're not worried about spilling. It's still nasty stuff. In some cases, it takes some more energy. There's less of it, but it takes some more energy to treat because of the need to add fuel for the bugs. Getting over my head again in terms of the engineering side, but I guess we're just saying step effluent is not particularly cleaner than gravity effluent. It's a little different, but it's no cleaner from a spill perspective. And maybe with that, I should pass it to Rob to tell me if I'm wrong about this.
Go ahead, Rob.
Al, can you please?
These people are talking behind me. How about order for yourself? I can't hear what's going on.
Okay. Would everyone please respect the TAC and not have separate conversations while the TAC is meeting? Rob, please.
Thank you. I think the one major difference would be what we call in our business settleable solids. And those are the things that if you take a beaker of this, or floatable solids too, anything that can be settled and anything that will float. And obviously any type of spill that has any organic material, nitrates, other things can deprive a surface water of oxygen and is a concern. I think the point...
have a higher impact on surface water bodies. And that's the other thing I wanted to point out. I've seen in some of the reports we're talking about the risk of release. I haven't seen any sort of studies that talked about the risk of one versus the other in terms of release. But I do know from running pressurized systems for potable water supply, we do have leaks, and these leaks can range from a seep to a full blown torrent, and it is not uncommon to have. And as the infrastructure ages, the more likely that is to occur. Now, gravity is sort of a function of lift station shutting down. In pressurized systems, we have booster stations, and they do shut down. So I see risks. I see risks for both. There are different types of risks, but I haven't seen anything that quantified the probability of one over the other. There are different release mechanisms. Some can be very high volume impact, but I don't see something in written, as far as I've been searching, something that says one has a higher risk versus the other.
Thank you. Any other comments to public comment from the TAC?
I wish somebody would talk about the solar.
Al, we've had public comment, please.
I'm sick of you.
Okay, why don't you... go in the back then. Al, please.
Yell at me one more time, buddy.
Please, Al.
Just keep messing with me.
Okay, with that, we're going to bring it back to the TAC for our... we're going to keep it with the TAC for our discussion. And we had... of the two reports that we had on slides, we had... two kind of different takes. One, a tabular summary, and the other was more of a narrative. I think both of them have merits, and maybe the possible report should include both. But why don't we, for discussion, since it has a lot of the details in it, would if we use the financial committee's tabular for
owner would pay that cost for the electrical connection.
Okay, so that So the con statement under gravity is incorrect then, because it brings...
Actually, if you check the unlock cost in the fine screen, it separates out and puts that into the electrical cost that the homeowner is responsible for in the event of a step collection system. Is included in unlock cost, and it's still much lower than gravity. If you compare unlock cost to the homeowner...
No, actually it isn't. Online costs, homeowner, for step stag is 5.4 to 5.9 million.
Right, and it's 10.9 electrical, to...
Electrical connection, 9.1 to 14.3.
We have worked consistently along with TAC proceedings and the county's direction in that the premium separate electrical
connection. That is not the premium. That is not the premium.
Okay.
That is the regular electrical cost.
I'll go back and look at the numbers. My understanding is that we took it straight out of the collection chapter and the numbers come right out.
3.18. Take a look at it.
I will.
Because you will find that it's higher.
I did notice, in fact, I brought it up when we had the discussion because I think it is a very important issue. We touched on that in our afternoon meeting about homeowner or on-lot costs. And I was told by the project team that the division that they made in the fine screening report as to whose cost is whose is not accurate. They don't know. That was just for illustrative purposes what the total cost would be, and depending on financing or other factors, where the line is drawn between on-lot costs that the homeowner had to pay versus that the project picked up are yet undetermined. If anyone has... Rob, go ahead.
I think that your statement's correct. I think that there's, well, in the report, it does state that the project facilities do not include the electrical connection. And I think that to the extent there needs to be a special benefit analysis, that's where the leaning is. But I would agree with you, that's not totally definitive going forward.
Okay. And well, because the tank is part of the project. So what I want to look at is purely the items that are outside of the tank. Right, exactly. So if we're looking at gravity, we're looking at a single line from the house to the street and replacement of landscape or whatever needs to occur. If we're looking at the step system, then we're looking at a much bigger area of disruption that would be solely the responsibility of the homeowner. Well, you're going to have a hole approximately, and I don't know the dimensions, about 100 square feet, I believe.
Yeah.
In the front yard for the step plus the lines. So we are having a bigger area of disturbance. No, but what I'm saying is in here, in this particular cons for gravity, you have higher on lot costs paid by individual homeowners, and a pro for the step is lower on costs paid by the individual homeowners. If we're taking into account the disruption and the replacement and the restoration of that, then it's actually bigger with the step because more area is being disturbed. Yeah, so I think that it's needs to be more complex than is in that particular thing. And that's one thing that we've been struggling with, and I think there's certain positive aspects environmentally to the step stag, and there's certainly a lot more disruption that goes on the individual lots with the step, but there's less disruption in the streets. So, I mean, that's a balancing thing. But in this particular case, we do have all the restoration costs, which will go back to the individual homeowner. And if, in fact, as I mentioned this afternoon, if the tank goes under the driveway, that driveway has to be replaced and repaired at the sole cost of the homeowner. So I think if we're going to use this as a guideline or a template, then that's the type of things that we need to include here as qualifiers.
And if I could just touch on that, as Rob kind of noted, the reason why we looked at that is because the way the report lays it out, it appears one way, and so since that might not be the way it is, but that was the reason why it ended up in that fashion.
Yeah, and we fully understand why it's the way it is. We're just trying to make sure
right.
that it's clear what the ultimate outcome of this and who's paying what.
I
I mean, ultimately, we're paying everything, but...
Exactly. That's good. If I can just clarify real briefly, when Bill wants this to be a starting point or a talking document, right, please understand we were in no way trying to capture the points that environmental and engineering would incorporate. This is just coming, you know, off of our discussions in our heads, so we're hoping that you will...
Covered several things, so that was the purpose, and I think you did a pretty good job on this. What we're going to find out, I'm sure, is as we put this together, that there are duplications, and when we get together as a committee to put this together into a document, we can then eliminate those duplications from the different committees.
Bill, I guess... Maybe this is following on Karen's lines. I think there's two very different things we need to do here. One is do we like this format as a template for us to fill in? And then the other is what do we fill it in with? And, you know, that's going to be, I guess I'm struggling process-wise to think about, you know, I don't know if this has been clear to the folks who've been attending our meeting so faithfully, but, you know, we've been operating entirely just as essentially three different groups, and we get together for these meetings. We don't talk outside the groups. We don't exchange documents. I come here. It's the first time I see what you guys have put together. It's the first time I see what the other folks have put together. So it's hard for me to see how – I mean, I think I can agree with this template that the Finance Committee has put together. I think this is a functional template. I think the challenge is that it's as we fill in all of our pros and cons from all three of our groups, A, it's going to get much larger, and then B, we're not all going to agree on different things. And so, you know, we're already getting, you know, well, I read the report this way, you read the report that way, I included this number, you didn't. Some of that's factual and can be resolved. Some of it's not factual and is differences of perspective and opinion. So I guess my comment is I think this template could work for us, but I'm interested in hearing from the other committees how. So, I mean, we could take this, we could add our pros and cons to it and make our edits, you know, or comments on what Karen has put in. The engineering folks could do that. I guess the step of how we hash out our differences, both in how we add up the numbers and, you know, whether we think something is more of a pro or more of a con, that part of it, I think we're going to need a series of eight-hour meetings as a group, you know, sitting at a much smaller table where we can pass things back and forth. I mean, I don't see how we're going to do it unless we get to much more of like...
I agree with exactly what you said. That was my reason for it, and you may have been out getting your data when I announced in my... my comments that I'd like to have a meeting tomorrow with a representative from each of the committees, and Karen has volunteered from the financial, and Maria has volunteered, but she's also volunteered you on the environment, and I haven't heard from the engineering group yet. So, but you're right; it's not an easy task. I recognize that.
I may be submitting a minority point here or a comment. I have nothing against the financial format here. It's okay. We started to do something like that, but we found a great deal of difficulty because we simply felt that all of our points were important. Otherwise, we wouldn't have put them in originally. Yeah. And that led to, we found we could combine them, but we said that really wasn't accomplishing much. But I was enamored by the Environmental Committee's report, which included all of their, in finer print, but all of their pro-con statements and very nice summaries with respect to their comments and executive points. And that drew it together in a way that was, to me, not only understandable, but focused on what was really important in their minds. And it's a format that I'd prefer to see. If you want to do some combination, that would be all right. But I really think it's important we have an executive summary and something ties it together in terms of comments. I also have some comments here, and Bill, you can tell me if you want me to go into this, but I've looked at, and I just took one as an example here. I looked at the disposal system and the comments made by the Financial Committee, as well as those by the Executive Committee, and I also thought through what our position was. And would you like me to talk about those comparisons?
Yes, go ahead, please.
All right. I'm looking at, it doesn't have a page number here, but the financial page, and also the page 2 by the Executive Committee. Excuse me. Well, maybe they are the Executive Committee. Yeah. If we get all of you writing this, and you had to put it someplace, and the place is a spray field. Now, hopefully that won't be often, but during the startup of the plant, that may be more often than we would like. So spray fields, from an engineering viewpoint, have to be there. Again, we don't like it, but I may comment here that the Financial Committee put down cost per acre foot mitigated, and they came up with $12.2 million, which is an outrageous number. And I would suggest that they have their ratio upside down. It'd be better to talk about acre feet per $1,000, and then that number would be effectively zero because you get no significant mitigation by a spray field. Yeah. The cemetery reuse, which I have no comment on that, except again that ratio, now you have the cost per acre feet mitigated is negligible. Actually, it should be infinity if you divide by zero. But so therefore, you have to take the upside down of that. By in terms of agricultural reuse, I assume by that you also mean exchange? In lieu at this point. Okay, then I question the reducing the aquifer by 460, the pumping in the lower aquifer by 460 acre feet, but that's another matter. I would, in our position, agricultural reuse and agricultural exchange are both included because we think they're extremely important. And also goes to the point of why we need spray fields and why we need winter storage. Because if you're going to do agricultural reuse and you're going to do agricultural exchange, you need spray fields and or and you're going to rely on the agricultural reuse and exchange. You're going to need spray fields and winter storage. And the reason I point out the winter storage, because let's see how it all comes together, winter storage takes up a lot of space. We're talking about something 10 acres.
Can we have a little quieter back there, please? Thank you.
That's now back to Brodersen. Our committee has discussed this in significant a lot of detail. And setting aside Brodersen for the moment, we feel it's important that we have a mechanism, a reliable mechanism, for returning water to the upper aquifer. At the short term, that's not so important because it's rather plumped up right now in terms of cooking and raisins. It's got a lot of water in it right now. But when the sewer gets started, it's a necessary ingredient. But again, we had to be very careful on how we do that. And so this is why our committee, and this is what echoes what the Environmental Committee says, we need to have another plan. Because maybe Brodersen won't work out or it will not be able to put enough water back into the upper aquifer. And one alternative is injection wells. And so we feel that the county should have that as part of the plan, at least as a backup plan and something we have to think about. And by injection wells, we're thinking about injection wells on the west side. So that would give us a lot of flexibility and controllability in terms of the whole process. Now, as I looked at the comments by the environmental group, I was glad to see, mentioned injection wells, and that's good. And they also said here that they felt Brodersen was an important part of the wastewater project, and I think for the reasons that I just mentioned. So I see a lot of common issues here that are coming out between at least environment and engineering and somewhat with respect to the financial committee. As far as format is concerned, I have a preference for the executive summary and comments because I think those are the things which will really serve to tie it together. And I've talked too long here. So.
Thank you, Russ. Well, one thing I'd like to point out is in our pro-con analysis, as we've gone through all the chapters, we have included a lot of numbers, and all the numbers have come from the report, fine screening report. We are aware that there are some errors in those numbers, and they're going to be modified shortly. But I believe that in our summary, we probably don't need to bring those numbers again in our summary, because they are, as I say, changing numbers, but more comparison of which is, because what the numbers do tell us, maybe not the exact cost, but the relative costs of one alternative to another. And that's really kind of the important issue, because the numbers are going to change dramatically. We all know that as we as they go down the line. And so having a relative cost between alternatives might be a better way in our summary, because, as I said, in the body of the pro-con analysis, we have...
There has been, let me just read it here. It says, ability to mitigate seawater intrusion is not tested, modeled, or calculated. The issue about modeling, the Broaddrison Zone has been modeled in several different ways. In the Tri-W project, the leach fields were specifically modeled to look at the flow rate and determine the position of the harvest wells and production of the harvest wells. And it did indicate a certain amount of leakage to the lower zone. So there was that one modeling effort. The other effort was a regional, the entire basin model. That also has been modeled and included the Broaddrison leach field area. And the other thing that's more important is actually two more things. The lower zone recharge study, and that was a companion study, the seawater intrusion study, did talk about the fact that the water from in the lower western zone receives quite a bit of its recharge from the upper zone. So there is recharge from the upper zone to the lower zone in that area. So it is that is another study that supports the fact that the Broaddrison Zone leach field would contribute to mitigation of seawater intrusion. And then lastly, Cleith developed a seawater mitigation factor of 0.22, and that was developed specifically from using the model, a reiterative use of that model and developing that seawater mitigation factor. So there is a lot of study in that. Now, what Russ was saying is, well, that's modeling, and then when we start going into reality, is that really going to be the case? And that's the reason why having a diversified portfolio of effluent disposal, including emergency discharge to spray fields, is very important. So I just kind of wanted to bring that up. The other thing about the Broaddrison leach field, you know, looking on the quality side of things, is I've seen a couple of comments saying tertiary treatment is not required, and that in fact was how it was permitted in the Tri-W project, which led to litigation. The water purveyors were very concerned about that. NWRI report talks about using the groundwater recharge regulations, the draft groundwater recharge regulations for that. So that is an important ingredient for us to maintain the sustainable yield of that upper basin, is to have this recharge at upper zone.
Thank you, John. Karen?
Yeah, I'm so grateful for this process. This is terrific, and this is what I would like to see for us finalizing things. We've given you something for you to come back to us on and explain, or tell us why you disagree, or what should be changed. And when I hear what you're saying, that makes great sense. Some things I would take out. And if something is not agreed upon, even if I still think that it should be in there, that might be something that should come out. And I would imagine the same may be true in reverse when we receive things from your two groups. Back on format, though, I'm going to recall our conversation at the noon meeting on July 16, where we talked about format a little bit. That was another occasion where I kind of brainstormed to put a couple things out there. And if you recall, one of the formats we looked at had boxes and bullets, and we talked about the language that I had put in there was a spin on Consumer Reports magazine, and it used the best for and the buts. And you said, well, yeah, let's skip the best for and make that pros and cons. But we did have a discussion on that, if I recall, and you kind of liked the boxes and the way of weaving it a little bit differently instead of separate line items. So I just wanted to refresh our memory on that.
Marshall?
Now?
Yes.
I would agree with Karen 100%, and that's why in our report, which we unfortunately had in glitches getting it prepared and distributed here, we did the grid or the pro-con analysis in the traditional format, for lack of a better term, and then we did the comments and the executive summary below that. The way we understood that the process was going to work out was that we would have a summary grid similar to what the financial group did, but also have a written executive summary. So we would have both those tools. And that's why we did the report in the fashion we did. We included the comment section just because there was things that were unclear and that really didn't fit into the grid system, nor did we feel like they should be included in the executive summary. And these are really comments that were addressed to the project team that we thought should be addressed as the project moves forward. But if I could just ask one question, and this Karen opened this door, so I think we might as well get there. Let me just make one further comment. First of all, I think if all our groups put our comments together in this type of a grid, there's a lot of duplicative comments. So I'm not sure it finalized the pro-con is it going to be a consensus or is it going to be majority vote, or how do we deal with the things that not everybody's on board with?
Potential going out on a limb, I think once we write up a report that we believe has everyone's input and some degree of consensus in it, the final report probably would be a majority vote if necessary. John.
If we're not separating out the comments per subcommittee, I take it we're just combining everybody's comments. Maybe when there is a disagreement, we can have some caveats in there that, you know, the environmental committee says this, the finance committee says this.
That's very possible, yes.
And that's just for the ones that are just in disagreement.
That's very, very possible. Yes. Good idea.
Thank you.
Yes.
Couple of things. I would recommend that you not get together in the next day or two with one representative from each group and try to force something together. I think it would be better if we had each one of the groups prepare their own criteria or these guys in whatever format we decide that we like. I think you'll find that when they all come together, most of that stuff is just going to drop out and there isn't going to be anything contentious. There might be a few items, but I would be very surprised with all the work that we've done that there's going to be much disagreement between like the environmentalists versus the engineering and vice versa. So my recommendation is that each one of these guys, everybody goes home, puts their thing together, whatever timeline you want, and brings it back.
Well, the timeline, that was our problem. The timeline is we need to, our goal is to have to finalize the report next Monday. So it means this, we have 1 week to accomplish this. So that's why it was a meeting tomorrow.
I think we set our own schedule. I mean,
No, this was set county, for us. We bought a week on that.
Just tell them we're not ready.
Well.
From what I see, certainly we can change the meeting perhaps to later in the week and give each group a chance to talk amongst themselves to see what they would provide or what they would like in and not in, or the format. Perhaps we can make the meeting Thursday instead of Tuesday and give folks a chance to, each group a chance to do their own thing.
When you say the meeting, you mean our meeting or? We've got to bring all three together.
I was referring to the meeting where you have one from each group come together with you.
Then that means each you're suggesting that each group meet prior to Thursday? This Thursday.
I had a,
tomorrow's Tuesday.
Maybe I'm changing subjects here. We're talking about what do we still need to do here? And I guess I have a question for the finance folks, which is this table, this series that you guys presented here, have you screened out the sort of less important pros and cons to get to this, or is this your whole pro con? Okay.
It's not the whole pro cons, but neither has it been screened. We had a discussion last Friday and didn't have enough time to come back all together and do the screening process. So this is kind of like a first draft wing at it, and I'm sure a lot of things will change and come out of it.
Okay. I'm just thinking out loud about how we move forward with this. I mean, what we've got in these tables is, you know, we went back over all the pro-con tables we'd created and sort of corrected things we wanted to correct, added things we wanted to add. We haven't made any effort to strip things out of it, and I think this was the engineering group's concern, too. It's like, well, it's already a very concise bullet list. How do we pull things out, and then we're sort of making, you know, sort of decisions that aren't entirely transparent about what we want to emphasize by pulling things out. I think we could combine this and yours. I mean, we don't have it from the engineering group yet. I mean, I guess I'm almost thinking, I understand the idea of giving us more time, but I feel like, you know, we can take more time and more time and more time. At some point, we need to sit down and do this. It's not easy, but I think it can be done. So I guess I'm willing to go at it right away, and, you know, meaning tomorrow.
John?
Yeah, all of our work very, you know, it resembles both formats. And, I think the thing we need to do here is agree on a format, and we get consistent. And then perhaps we could forward, you know, we could work on that, forward it to, you know, you or somebody in the county and look for duplicates, highlight that, merge the documents, and then, you know, we can look at that at the following meeting.
Well, that was the intention of having a meeting tomorrow. Okay. But as a committee could do that, that's fine too.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm thinking. We have to agree on a specific format, and there's not a huge difference between the formats we're talking about here. I mean, brief narratives, the executive summaries, environmental group came up with that seems like that might be kind of a nice thing to have. So basically, we got to, you know, in ours, we have our criteria here. It seems to me if I pull out that one column, then boom, I'm done.
Almost, yes.
So I don't think it'll take a lot of work. It's just we have to figure out what format you want, font size, everything. We can get it. We get it and deliver it any way you want it. We have the information here. So once we agree on the format, we can get it. And then now there's going to be a search for duplicates. It's almost like developing a mailing
exactly.
list or something.
Oh, yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
So that's kind of what I'm suggesting. So maybe we should focus in on what our format should be and specifications.
Okay. I've heard three basic formats or a combination of formats. I've heard, there certainly has to be a narrative part of this. There's no doubt we need to work on a narrative. But as we talk specifically about the summary of the pro-cons and not the additional narrative about how we've arrived at these things and a little bit about how the TAC operated, we could do just a pure tabular a table format. We could do something similar to what the environmental group did with it, which is table and narrative, or we can do what Karen suggested in that earlier meeting, where we combine the narrative in the table as we go through it.
As I look at it,
I really like the executive summary. The only thing I'd really change on the environmental's setup would be to place the executive summary at the beginning, have the chart, and then have the comments. And anything we can't come to a true consensus on can be noted in the comments. And if we have to put it in there and note in the comments that it wasn't a strongly held belief on the part of the TAC, we can note that there. Or if there's something that one group felt should be in there but wasn't able to reach consensus, then that could be noted in the comments as well.
That sounds fine. Marshall?
I think that, yeah, I agree 100%. I think if we take the financial group's grid,
right,
and then put the executive summary first, then the grid, and then comments, which would be either the disagreements or things that we felt weren't included in the fine screening report that should be studied in the future project, or whatever comments we feel are appropriate, then I think that that gives us a product that works for all purposes. People that want to read the executive summary can read the executive summary. People that want to look at the grid and the particular pro-cons can do that. And then we've also expressed our concerns in there. So I think what I would agree 100% with Rob, that I think that's the way we need to go. It's just a question of how do we get there.
Make a motion. Group, comments? Is that?
Second.
Okay. Well, if everyone agrees with that, and I have absolutely no problem with that at all.
Do I need to make a motion?
Well, I don't think we need a motion.
Okay.
We all agree. Yes, go ahead, John.
So that gets us to a report where gathered everything. I still think there's another step where we have to look at our conclusions and whether we agree with each thing.
Right. Absolutely.
So I'm seeing possibly another meeting here. I think it'll take longer than just one more meeting here to get this wrap this thing up.
Well, if we could get Karen and I have volunteered to be the people who put the three pieces together from the three committees, combine them, do the get rid of the duplicates, and make a document. And our intention was to make that document, and then prior to our next meeting, that document will go out to everyone, the complete document that will have it all in.
Okay. What I'd suggest, if you're going to do that, I would cut and paste everything, get it in one document,
yeah.
And then when you're cutting out duplicates, to use the track tool changes, so you know what was taken out. And perhaps... some way to identify, I think you can use track changes for up to like four or five users or something like that, and maybe we want to have three subcommittee, you know, somehow to tag the, this came from the environmental committee, this came from engineering, this came from financial, so then we can see if something was dropped out and, you know.
We could put an E, an F, and a... We can note that. That's no problem. Or we can use a different kind of bullet.
I'm thinking if you just had the maybe a color font change for these
like
things,
that,
and then when you use the delete, it'll be in the the margin there and showing what was deleted, and you can kind of figure it out from there. I think
we can make it very clear.
Okay.
The question is, how soon can we get that from the committees? Midnight, what, tonight? can we? Is it possible to get those to me by Thursday morning?
I know I'm going to be out of town. I mean, when guys are working, it's kind of hard.
I know.
If we can get a weekend in there, that would help out quite a bit.
Well, then a weekend will mess up for our get into our.
Can we push that meeting back, though?
John, the thing that you prepared for tonight, does that have enough detail for us to work from?
It's different.
What we did is we described the TAC process, and then we felt that what we developed was concise enough, and we didn't want to eliminate the comments that we've made because we felt they were all important. I don't think it'll take that much time to get it into a format. It's just a matter of us getting together and agreeing on what, you know, what's going to go.
But would you let Bob and Russ put it together? I mean, both of, either of those have full... I know, Bob, you do have other things working, and so does Russ. Perhaps you have a little bit more time. You don't have a 9-to-5 job or something. You could put it together.
Well, could we? Yeah. Well, could we? Okay. Could we shoot for, you know, Saturday night type thing?
Well,
and, you know, I'll help you on the other end too if you'd like. I mean, you know, whatever's going to buy me a little bit more time.
Yeah, right. And I think financial is pretty close to done. So really, I hate to everyone look at you for, but
John, the problem is that if we wait until the weekend, then we don't have time to spit it back out to everybody for them to look at, so that we can discuss it next Monday night.
You
and
certainly
that's the
want
goal,
to have it in front of you.
Discussing and deciding by Monday. Mm-hmm.
So how could
we'll have to discuss it amongst ourselves here as far as when we can deliver. I can only speak to my schedule.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to be out of town for a couple of days. I won't even be back till Thursday. So so that's kind of what my situation is.
But would John have the opportunity to add anything he wants? Like if everything went forward without you here, next Monday night, he would still, I mean, because we have to approve whatever we're going to do. And so you would also have that opportunity to make any amendments or changes to the document.
We still have the comments in the executive summary. We could divide it up.
And I could help you on reformatting. That's not a problem. I could get that for you. We'll have a short break while the engineering committee confer. Okay, I'd like to bring the meeting back to order now. We've got our little problems, I think, a solution. I want to thank everyone for their patience. And what we're going to do is we will have everything together by Thursday morning, and Karen and I will meet Thursday afternoon. We'll get the information out to all of you by the weekend, so you have the weekend to study the complete document as we think we've received it, and we'll be able to discuss it in our meeting next week. And tomorrow, I guess, we'll arrange that after our tomorrow meeting. With that, I'd like to go back. Can we please have order back there? I'd like to go back to public comment, and we seem to have an awful lot of public comment slips here. We're going to limit it to 2-minute public comments. And if you don't need 2 minutes, please don't take it. And so we're going to start with George Taylor, followed by Al Barrow.
Good evening, George Taylor. This is for Rob. Y'all ready, huh? Okay. It is regarding some special properties receiving a special benefit 218 assessment vote. We were told recently that there are 3 subdivisions in Los Osos that have vested tract maps. Does this mean that the trust, the tract owners, will get to cast 275 votes for special benefits on houses that are not built yet?
Thank you. That was your question? Thank you.
No, not completely.
Well,
if I've got more than that, I'll just make a comment that I take great exception to Mr. Westman's statement that if Brodersen doesn't work, we'll just find something else. It's our money that's being spent for this damn thing. And don't tell me that you as engineers can't engineer something that's going to work, because we're paying for it and we don't want to pay for something that's just going to be a trial and error. Thank you.
Thank you. I will answer. Why don't you just answer that one, Rob? Even though that's really not tack business, but Rob has an answer for your question.
Yeah, just a very quick answer. My understanding is that whatever vacant properties, including vested lots, would not be in the first 218 vote, but would be in the subsequent vacant property vote.
Okay, our next speaker is Al Barrow, followed by Chris. Is Chris Albee still here?
Don't turn my time on yet.
I'm sorry. I'll reset it. Is that a comment, or do you wish to speak, Chris?
No, I do wish to speak.
Okay. Al Barrow, followed by Chris Albee.
The purpose of this pro-con analysis and all the work you're doing is to make a recommendation for a project to the Board of Supervisors
if
218 fails. That's what the purpose is stated on your agenda. It states it right here. It's in quotes, and it says, the TAC bylaws, purpose, and authority. So that's what it means. This is not to help the voters decide whether they want to make a 218 vote yes or no. It's not the case. So it's a very confusing document. I mean, the scope and discussion and the assumptions that you were handed by Carollo have been challenged over and over and over again. So the basis of your decisions will produce a false project or a false recommendation, because you have taken these assumptions and worked off of those assumptions, which are flat out not true. We've asked you over and over and over again to bring the industry step numbers in. They were never done. I made a nice list of comments I couldn't get a response from anybody on them in my public comment, and I was disappointed with that. And solar energy is such an important thing to have a viable alternative source of energy. AB 32, the state law, new laws that allow utilities to sell their energy back to the system, make that much of an enabling. There's a lot of credits for that. None of that has been looked at, and that's just a missed opportunity for you guys. It really is. You know, if you're just thinking about grid power, then I'm sorry to hear that. The Broderson clay lens is 200 feet below grade. To get that water,
Al, your time is up.
Your time will be up someday,
Al,
too.
Al, your time is up.
And your time will be up sometime, too. Okay, Bill?
Thank you, Al.
Get smart with me again.
Our next, Chris Albee, followed by Keith Weimer.
Hey, Chris Albee, CDO number 1019. I just wanted to comment on some procedural issues here with these things. When the TAC was formed, I was hoping it'd be on a workshop format, and all the meetings on a workshop format. The idea being to gather information from wherever that can help us in our endeavors. I see us getting our minutes chopped all the time. This business of not being able to turn in comment slips after public comment starts is bad because you have people watching at home. Something comes up they want to comment on, and they can't come down here and turn in a slip and speak on it. On my own, there's plenty of people here working on the project and technical advice and whatever. Personally, I'm getting smart about the 218, so in a couple of weeks you can ask me about it if you need to know anything. But I just don't like to see the minutes being cut back like they are. It happens almost every meeting. It's more important to get the information out here. I mean, we were going to meetings that lasted until 2 a.m. just to get all the information out. And to hold us to a schedule, no matter how few or how many people are here, just isn't right. The information is not getting out. That's all I've got.
Thank you very much. Keith Weimer, followed by Gail McPherson.
Thank you. A couple of quick comments. First, for the Environmental Committee, Don, you mentioned that you have some pros for the pond system, but at least on the last draft I got, I don't see any pros here, so I think you might need to go back over that before you go to the next phase. Also, I was corrected. INI refers to inflow and infiltration. What I referred to before was pollution or exfiltration, and Gail, who's an authority on this, is inform me that if a leaky pipe's a leaky pipe, you can assume exfiltration too. So that should be factored in, although I think it's the first time it's come up. I think that you know, obviously what you guys decide, your pros and cons and all your comments are going to affect the 218. And I think therefore you have an obligation to focus on what would be the most affordable projects possible. I think that the Finance Committee did that first, and I think that should be a very obvious and important part of your analysis. I think unless the public believes that there are some projects around 120, or at least the possibility of $100 to $130 per month, the 218 is going to have a difficult time passing the analysis, the cost analysis that the Finance Committee put together does have projects under that amount. I think you should look at those figures, and I disagree that just working with the figures that are thrown out there, even though they're somewhat inflated and or overly conservative or just wrong, is the right way to go. You better be working with the right figures and make sure they're as low as possible so that people have the belief that they're going to see a system on the 218 or systems that are affordable. Without that, I don't believe you're really doing your jobs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Keith. Gail McPherson, followed by Dave Duggan.
Gail McPherson. I wanted to just point out that I do have some expertise in the area of collection systems, and I worked quite a bit on the CMOM program and the spill prevention program. It's indeed a pollution issue, a huge environmental issue, and it's one of the things that Dan should know well, that that's what happens to our coast. It's mostly, you know, a lot of spills, and they don't come from necessarily the plant. That's very... Okay, so let me just start out by saying that we plan on a 20-year planning horizon, and I've done a lot of master planning before we even started all the projects, the 14 or so that I did deliver. I do want to say that the whole Brodersen discussion was a total tail wagging the dog here. You got this whole project, this whole thing that you're doing, and now you're going back and saying, let's have injection wells. That's hugely expensive. And then you're going to have MBR because that makes it better, because then you can go to RO. Well, the DHS requirements are going to require reverse osmosis. And you don't want to start out by saying, this is where I'm going to put my water, and it's going to be the most expensive process possible, because it's a good deal. Now, I understand you guys are water guys, and I don't even know if that's a conflict here, but I think you need to know that from a perspective of a spill, for instance, your water system, when it spills, goes spewing all over the place. You know that, it really fast. A low-pressure system does not do that. You've got apples and oranges here. And so I fear when I hear things like that that we're going to be in trouble. And so let me see if I can go back to energy per acre foot. That's a really simple equation. Ripley was going to pick up, well, he had a nice chart, and it was included in his chart on comparisons. The reason I mentioned that was that the county was going to pick up Ripley as a consultant on this to help out, and you could have easily had that information. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. I suggest that maybe they rethink that and get those numbers, because you definitely need those to make sense. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dave Dugan, followed by Frank Asilio.
Dave Dugan with Socialist. Let me read you something from this agenda. TAC meeting must be a place of open dialogue leading to the successful development of a comprehensive pro-con analysis on the various project alternatives. Let's go down the second paragraph. As volunteers working on behalf of the entire community, we will develop this analysis based on clear, objective, and accurate information. And I talked to you guys about trying to put numbers to these reports, and that these numbers don't jive, and some places are completely wrong. And here we are back again. You're saying, these numbers are going to change. And we found out there are misconceptions or some, there are problems with these numbers. And what I'm trying to say is that, first of all, I don't believe there's everybody here at this TAC is objective. I don't need to name names. We all know, because we watch the TAC meetings, so we can see who speaks towards what, and we know how they're leaning. As far as that's concerned, injection wells. I think this is something the water resource management is going to take care of, and that you guys should not really be dwelling on injection wells as part of a reuse. And that should stay out of your purview, because that's being handled in another area, in another arena. And the cost of injection wells is so prohibitive. This community can't handle that as part of the wastewater project. And that really grants and monies that can come from the state and the feds will help offset any monies for the reuse option. And if you're talking injection wells, well, just think of all the communities that use injection wells. They have 200, 300, 500,000 people helping pay for that. They're not specific to small towns like this. They're in huge areas like LA and such what. And I've done a little bit of study on who does injection wells. This community cannot bear that cost.
Thank you very much. Frank Asilio, followed by Bo Cooper.
Frank Asilio. When I hear that, you know, we need the spray fields again, we need those. I think there's better ways to, again, when you can look at other alternatives. When you lock yourself that you need these spray fields, then you're losing water. You know, what about wetlands? I haven't heard you discuss too much utilizing wetlands for excess flow, holding ponds. I mean, I don't know all. You have people in this audience as well as on the board that have more expertise than I do. But there's got to be other ways than just, or even, you know, when people say injection wells are too expensive, well, look at the cost of those injection wells. Put all that cost analysis together. And I've always said that water should be separated out from the wastewater for cost and also alternatives. And I always like to say that, you know, what's best for the community is important to me, not what's best for any particular water purveyor or all the water purveyors involved. Because we're going to be paying for it. I agree with Al Burrow about the solar system, to be able to have property that you can put solar panels on, utilize that energy, sell back the excess energy back into the grid, and recoup some funds from that too. But it's, you know, but it's good for the environment. It's good for long term. Those panels last for 30 years or so. The technology is improving all the time. So please look at other ways of utilizing our water, recouping it, and what would be the most cost effective way that we can have water back into the either upper, lower aquifer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bo Cooper, followed by Lacey Cooper.
Bo Cooper, from the today's agenda, the TAC, you yourself quote your TAC bylaws, just like Al says, and make recommendations to the Board of Supervisors on the pro and con analysis. Okay. The point from my side is that what you guys do is very, very important. There's going to be no CEQA. There's going to be no EIR before the 218 vote. The information you guys get out, the evaluations you guys put out, is going to be the basis of the knowledge that people will vote on. I want you to really think deeply about what you're doing, and if you can, be our voice. I go back to affordability. There's been no real talk about affordability. I want something in there. Again, from my side, a righteous thing to do would be to hold off on a report and evaluate affordability to real people and the real consequences to their lives. If you're not going to refuse to turn the report in, have some individual, somebody here say, hey, I object to this process without the affordability. If not that, I like a statement that to the Board of Supervisors, hey, affordability is important. We weren't able, weren't willing to consider it. So I'd like something like that in there, please. What you've probably noticed is you've become them. It's become an us versus them. You guys are you're our fellow citizens. You represent us. You're our voice right now to the Board of Supes. And the ill feelings that we're feeling is that we don't feel that you're really getting it, that you're really representing us, that you're thinking through the thing, through the issues, the way it ought to be thunk about. We want to be on the same side, and we're not perceiving that as happening. I'm not sure why that is. But anyway, I appeal to your hearts about the affordability thing. Please think deeply about what you need to do and can do about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Lacey Cooper, followed by Lou Tarnatsky.
Yes, I'll speak fast. don't rush when you're doing your report. Also, I had a question. Are you using the wastewater committee comments from the LOCSD? They did a lot of good work, you know, reviewing the Carrillo report. That could be helpful. The other thing is, I'm hoping that you will look, and maybe you have already done this, look at the Orenco. I was just looking through the Orenco, and I'm sure perhaps it's in the Ripley, too. They talk about the Orenco, of course, the presentation was short, but they had the difference between the step versus gravity environmental impacts, and it's good as an outline to really look at those and take those seriously, because there are differences. And also, I think it's speaking to what Bo was speaking to about. Right now, as in the brochures and in the Carrillo report, you have all the things, the different parts that come together make the least unaffordable. You know, so it's not really affordable. It's least unaffordable. And I agree. I think it would be great for this committee to request a formal affordability study with an economic impact study. Because that's an official document, actually good for getting grants. It's also, there's ways to structure it so California isn't compared to Alabama, meaning our cost of living here is much higher than Alabama's. And so there's ways to structure in those kind of things, you know, like New York's more expensive, that kind of thing. So
Anyway, an affordability study is really important because this does impact the 218. I know it's the engineer's report, but right now, the engineer's report, just one more sentence, will reflect an amount that people can't afford in this community. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Lou Ternatsky, followed by Bruce Payne.
I guess I'd like to draw an analogy between the Manhattan Project and the sewer project. The Manhattan Project took about 2.5 years for a talented group of people to come up with a very complex technical system. I take you guys to be experts. You're selected as experts. Maybe by the random draw, 2 or 3 of you are fools, but I think you guys have the bit and you should run with it. Maybe the Manhattan Project worked because they didn't have public comment every 5 minutes. What I would like you to do is go from here and work out your differences. I don't want a wimpy consensus. I want coherence. I'd like your report to come out unified. You're all aboard. Leave no strands for certain people that are going to unwind it and unwind it and unwind it. Be the experts that you are.
Thank you very much. Bruce Payne, followed by Alan Perelman.
Good evening again. Bruce Payne, resident of Las Osas. It's very interesting opinions going on here. I heard a comparison one time. It's opinions are like, shall we say, nostrils. Everybody has some, but they're only important to the people that own them. A lot of the things that are in your report are opinions, and people form their opinions by the information they're given, which I noticed some of the information seemed to be confusing or contradictory, possibly not even correct. One of the things that's been going on information in this village for a long time is an outright lie that our septic tanks are polluting the bay. Some septic tanks may be slightly contributing to some pollution in the bay. Those are the septic tanks that were permitted without even a simple percolation test, which they would not have passed. Any other county in this state, the health department issues permits for septic tanks. The county here took over that responsibility in the early 60s, as I understand. The wealth of data about the nitrates in the water is collected from illegal wells that were not sealed properly, were polluted by surface runoff, and this was known as early as December 1984 by an interoffice memo from Roger Briggs to the whole water board. Nothing was done about those until a lawsuit in 2001, I believe, by Case and some members that were Case at that time. And the wells were redrilled by Cleith and Associates, and the nitrates have been coming down ever since then. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Alan Perelman, followed by Richard Marketson.
Hello, Alan Perelman. Let me be the first to congratulate the TAC Working Group on the selection of Dr. David Dubinsky to the empty environmental subcommittee slot. There was concern by the public. They detected some bias in the early selection, and I agree with that first perception. There's a tenet of project management that teams are not born as such. They are created through a process, and in this process, to the degree that you accept the high quality of public input, I think you are successful. I would like to say that I have great respect for Bill. I know him through his work with Fred Edelgata and the Land Use Committee of LOCAC. By the way, that committee will need a new member, as will LOCAC as a whole. Dick Parker here, another applicant to the environmental slot, may have some information on that. So Los Osos lost a great Land Use Committee chair, Buelton great. Gains a great feria. For the first time, I believe that not all roads necessarily lead to Tri-W. Trust but verify. Colonel Potter of MASH said, If someone gives you a gift horse, the first thing you should do after thanking them is to take it behind the barn and take a long, hard look at its teeth. And there's in the larger picture, there's a conclusion that I will really resist. I hope you also resist this conclusion. I heard it from somebody in Santa Maria. And he said, perhaps low-income and fixed-income citizens should not live on the coast. You have come a long way, but there's still a long way to go. Congratulations on your milestones. And I would like to, on a technical note, mention, Rob, could you provide to Pio Lombardo the most updated nitrate map, the one that includes the topographical influences? Thank you.
Thank you, Alain. Richard Margetson.
Trying to organize since I only got 2 minutes. Okay, Richard Margetson, your analysis coming out, I think you should maybe wait until that fine screening, final draft, whatever it is, comes out, just in case there are some major number discrepancies. The meetings here, it would be nice if the community had copies of what you're talking about, because you still can't see the screen from the other side of the room unless you're right on top of it. Two other comments. This chart on page 5 of the financial working group, up at the top of each of the 4 boxes, there's a cost per acre foot per year mitigated. It's very confusing. I don't get how spray fields are 12.2 million and Broderson is 68,000. And, this is a snapshot in time. This is if you assign a cost, if this was only a 1 year, had only a 1 year life expectancy. So, you got to take some of that into account, too, down the road. And then my last comment is, this is the one I wasn't able to get in this morning because I had Pablo's attention for a while, is there was discussion about the smell of the ponds out of town and not being able to mitigate that with odor control, possibly, and all that, and a big concern about a barn covering maybe the headworks and stuff. I don't remember a whole lot of concern back in 2000, 2001, when the original project at Tri-W was ponds.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
Okay, that concludes our public comment. We have a few questions, I believe. Do you have some responses to any? Did you take notes, Rob?
Yeah, I think addressing George's question, I think most of those were statements other than
questions.
The information that PO needs, which I can get that.
Okay. Is there anyone else from TAC who has a response to a comment or question?
Yeah.
John.
I wanted to respond to the statement that RO would be required for groundwater recharge. I did review these draft regulations, and I also talked to Jeff Stone, who is the Department of Health Services contact for those regulations. And reverse osmosis is not specifically required. It starts off with filtered tertiary water, which there's specific definitions for those filtered and tertiary treatment. There's specific definitions for that. Recycled water has to meet that. Then there are a number of protective mechanisms, and depending on which, how are you going to do it, different types of treatment kicks in. You can blend up to 50% recycled water with potable water, and then that's essentially it, coupled with horizontal separation from the recharge area to where the drinking water wells are and residence time. There's also certain water quality specifications that's triggered in. There's a variety of treatment techniques. If you want to increase the percent of recycled water going into these recharge areas, then additional treatment kicks in. Advanced oxidation will kick in above 50%. RO kicks in, I'm not quite, I believe it's about 75%. I'd have to go back and look at those draft regulations. But it depends on how you operate that recharge system. The other thing I wanted to say is this project is not a simple disposal situation. If there's additional treatment costs to operate a recharge system here and we can maintain the balance of the basin and operate the basin within its sustainable yield to provide the supply we need at build out, that additional cost has to be weighed against importation of water. And those are the two choices that you have. And that's basically it. There is a water customer and a wastewater customer. They're the same people, essentially. And we need to figure out a way to balance those costs to be as minimum as possible. That's just the comment I wanted to make.
Thank you. I'd like to make just one comment also. I think Al Barrow brought it up. TAC will not and is not going to recommend any projects. Our recommendations are pro-con analysis of things brought forth. We do not recommend and will not be recommending a project. With that, is there any other issues that anyone on the TAC would like to discuss?
It's just not clear when it says make recommendations to the Board of Supervisors on the pro-con analysis.
Right.
How that what that means? I didn't expect to make any recommendations so much as to make a pro-con analysis.
There's the pro-con analysis on the components. John.
Yeah, there's. I looked at that too because that was a little bit confusing to me. But it does specifically stay in the bylaws that. The TAC is not is the purpose of the TAC is not to make a specific recommendation on a project, but the county rather elected to pursue a community-wide survey in order to obtain the community preferences for
right.
the alternatives.
Right.
So actually, it's right here, right in front of me. The committee is not intended to develop a recommendation on which project alternative should be implemented by the county. Since the county intends to conduct a community advisory vote for that purpose.
Thank you.
That agenda quote actually, that's what led me to look into that, actually comes out of 2D in the bylaws. And that it says the purpose of the committee is to assist in the development of a pro-con analysis of project alternatives, receive public input, and make recommendations to the board on that pro-con analysis. So that was a little bit confusing to me, but later on it says not a specific recommendation on the project.
Right. Any other comments from the TAC? With that, I'd like to thank you all for your efforts for tonight and our next week, and we'll see you at the next meetings. Thank you very much.
Two things, the audience.